Call the meeting to order. Since we just have a short time, we have to be back in session at 6 o'clock, so we will end by 10:02 at the very, very latest. We have a quorum, so first we need to approve the minutes of March 4th. Representative Olson moves the minutes of March 4th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Representative McFarland moves the minutes of March 5th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Representative Morgan.
Thank you.
No microphone. Oh, no microphone. We found it. Yeah, we want it recorded for posterity. Sounds like it's on. Welcome, and you can move your own bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 2978 for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance omnibus bill.
Morgan moves House File 2978. Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to share with you an experience that I had last fall that I think is unique on this committee. We have some other retired teachers in here, but I don't think we have any active teachers, Representative Markle. So perhaps Representative Markle can share some of this with me as well. I had the opportunity to go back into the classroom for the first semester, teaching physics and chemistry at Burnsville High School. And my experience was similar in many ways to the stories we heard yesterday before this committee from school districts, parents, school administrators from around the state. One of the classes I teach, chemistry, a lab-intensive class, obviously. Sometimes a lab class that deals with many dangerous chemicals and fire and all kinds of other issues. And the chemistry class sizes in Burnsville have grown significantly in the time that I've been teaching there. My classes, each and every one of them, each and every one of the three, was over 35 students in a class. It puts a great deal of stress on equipment, supplies, the students, and indeed their instructor, as they are working with dangerous materials and in a space that is not large enough for that many students. We had similar issues in other classes. We had 120 students registered to take regular physics, whereas in many past years, 120 students would be four sections of 30 students in each class, which is large, but a decent size for physics students. This year, we had three sections of 40 students in each class. We had calculus classes over 40. We had algebra 2 classes, which, of course, is now a required class throughout the state of 37 or larger. We had English 10, 10th grade English and 11th grade English classes, where students are learning to write, and teachers need to spend time reviewing the writing samples and getting feedback to them quickly so they can revise and edit. We had English classes of those 36 and 37. We had fine arts classes anywhere from 37 to 48, where students are actually making things and creating products and need the oversight from the teacher. And, of course, physical education class sizes that are similar. Burnsville School District has cut $22 million in recent years. This in spite of a past levy in 2002. $22 million in budget cuts. Admittedly, some of that is due to declining enrollment, but most of that was due to funding, long-term funding problems from the state. Our students have had lost opportunities. Our business department, which was six or seven faculty members strong when I started teaching in 1991, is down to one plus a part-time teacher today. In our science department, advanced level classes that we've taught in the past, a chemical analysis class that many students who've gone on to college and majored in chemistry or gone to med school have said was the most important science class they took at Burnsville High School. An advanced scientific research class that has sent students on to the International Science and Engineering Fair over the past 10 years. Those courses were not able to be offered last year because instead of having a class of 12 or 14, which those classes would have been, we just did not have the staffing to let those classes go because it would have bumped class sizes up in other classes even higher than they already would have been. There no longer is a fifth-level French or German class. Those were college in the schools classes where students could get college credit for high school level classes. We were not able to offer those last year because, again, the number of enrolled students did not meet the minimum level that has been set higher and higher due to our staffing problems at Burnsville High School. As we heard yesterday, Burnsville is not an island. We are one of many school districts across the state who are facing these same problems, and I would argue probably every one of you has a school district facing these concerns in your own legislative district. We heard yesterday from schools that have cut up to 30% of their budget in recent years. We heard of strings of failed levies that have divided the community instead of uniting them behind the heart of their communities, which is their schools. And I thought the most compelling argument that we heard yesterday was that children do not have the opportunity to repeat years that are lost. Another way to put that is there is only 1 year you're in kindergarten. There's only 1 year you're in third grade. There's only 1 year you're a senior. And these are three significant years in the state of Minnesota. Kindergarten, your first year of formal schooling, with the preparation beginning for what will really begin in third grade, which is when we begin to take our MCA 2 assessments, which students will begin to be tested and schools will begin to be judged based on the job that they are doing, educating their students. And finally, your senior year, the last opportunity for a free and uniform public education in this state to prepare you for what comes next. And hopefully for more and more students, that will be a secondary education that will prepare, a post-secondary education that will prepare them for the 21st century economy. We need to do a better job of making sure that students entering that kindergarten year, that third grade year, that senior year, and indeed all the years in between, really have the most opportunities possible. House File 2978 is an attempt to address some of those needs that we've heard from parents and school districts around the state. What will House File 2978 do? It will provide an additional 2% on the per pupil formula next year. It will increase special ed aid to further reduce the cross subsidy and eventually reach the 68% level that the state wants found itself obligated to fund. And finally, we revised some required language on levy renewal ballots to more clearly communicate the impact on these renewals to the taxpayers. I think these three steps would be an answer to address the concerns that we heard expressed before in this committee yesterday. There probably are other answers. This is my effort and the effort of others to try to address those issues. I don't have anybody testifying with me today, Madam Chair. I'm sure there will be others who do want to testify, though, on behalf or perhaps against this bill today. But depending on how you want to do things, I'm finished with my testimony. I'd be happy to answer questions, or you can call up others to testify if that's what you choose.
Thank you very much, Representative Morgan. Let's go straight to the testifiers. We have four signed up. And because we have such a short amount of time, I think I'll take questions after all the testifiers. Mary Gilbert, St. Paul Public Schools.
Mary Gilbert, the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public Schools, and I just want to say that we enthusiastically endorse Representative Morgan's bill. The St. Paul Public School District is looking at a $10 million deficit this year that is driven in part by the 1% increase in the formula and declining enrollment. It's pretty hard for us to explain to our property taxpayers that they stepped to the plate a year and a half ago. And at the time, we made a commitment to them that we would fund some of the extras with our referendum, even though in our ongoing referendum we were doing $3 million of special ed and $3 million of English language learner revenue. So we were paying for some of the mandated programs. We did continue that in the referendum. But at that time, we decided that we were not going to let the state completely off the hook for funding the inflationary increases in the basic general ed formula or the mandated programs like special education or transportation or capital facilities. And so that's why we decided not to completely assume that the state wouldn't step up to the plate and meet its constitutional obligation as well. And so I'm sure that many of you are getting fatigued from all of the districts that are coming before you talking about the cuts that they have to make. but they are deep and they are real, and they have been going on for too many years, and we're beginning to dismantle some of the very reforms that this committee has put in place that has actually led to some of the reductions in achievement gaps that we've had at the district so far.
Hopefully, instead of getting us fatigued, it will energize. Mary Ciccone, Parents United.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mary Ciccone, Parents United Public Schools. Yesterday, we eloquently heard Robbinsdale schools are looking to cut all middle school activities, ninth grade football, closing one or two schools. Most cuts are in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, but next year they're going to cut at the high school. Brainerd's is cutting all foreign language courses except for Spanish, and they're only 2 years. And the AP courses as well. Why is that significant? Because Brainerd is the number one in the state for the percentage of kids taking and passing AP courses, and those are the very courses that they have to cut. Many of these districts were really just losers in this year's levy lotto. But let's look at the winners. A successful bond referendum from Fergus Falls, they're going to be cutting $1.2 million in operating. And a successful Osseo will be cutting unbelievably egregious cuts. Stillwater, who passed a six-year levy, they're going to have a moratorium on cuts for the first time in 8 years, for 1 year. Yet their community thinks that this is a six-year levy. I have here, so that not to continue the drone, but for the chair, I have letters from 40 different districts that continue with this story. And they wrote these letters to the governor and the speaker of the House and the majority leader to let them know what's happening, so those will be available. I'm really not sure. Districts have done all that you've asked. They've prayed for growth. They've spent down their fund balances. They've been cutting for over a decade, and they've worked to pass levies. Parents, we know, have sold candy and wrapping paper. They've held the bake sales. They've formed foundations that actually are trying to raise in excess of $250,000 a year. And they've become really savvy campaign workers. But I honestly don't know what more we can do. I honestly don't know. We need your help, and this bill provides the help. I have to say that I think voter-approved levies are really important. They are very, very important. But the bargain struck with the state for voter-approved is that the state would provide enough for the basics. And that's not where we are today. These levies are providing the basics. So please consider this bill very carefully, and I hope that it progresses. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Scott Kroonquist, AMSC.
And actually, when I said four testifiers signed up, we have five, in case there's any worry. I can read minds, you know, I was a teacher.
Madam Chair, committee members, Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Representative Morgan's bill. We really, I know it may not seem like it in the context of the current budget situation the state is facing, but the bill before you is really quite modest. And if you think about it and just examine what it actually does, what this bill would do would be to provide school districts with an inflationary increase in the basic formula amount. And it would fund the existing state special education formula. Quite simply, that's what it does. So I think to describe it as a modest bill is actually quite the fact. We've heard a lot of rhetoric, a lot of talk about people want to hold education harmless in spite of the budget deficits that the state faces. Well, the truth of the matter is if you want to do that, you need to pass this bill. Because without it, school districts are going to be making significant cuts. And there's evidence you should be getting a handout of a budget survey that we conducted recently. We did this jointly with Schools for Equity, 36 school districts in the metropolitan area. And what we asked them was to consider what their budget situation looks like for next school year, just assuming current law. So assuming no new revenue or no cuts. And then just to assume they want to try to operate the same program next year that they're operating this year. As you can see, those districts are looking at a cumulative nearly $75 million in budget gap for next year. So it's quite clear that we do need this bill just to at least to try to approach holding schools harmless. I have to admit that I get a little nervous when I hear those words, that we want to hold education harmless, because last time we heard that was, I believe, in 2003, and that year we were held harmless to the tune of $185 million in cuts, and also massive shifts in the school aid payments. So we're hoping that holding harmless does not mean that again, clearly. Why are we in this situation? Despite the fact that you approved a decent bill last year, and we've all heard that it was almost an $800 million increase, well, the reality is about $350 million of that was restoration, again, of those 2003 cuts in the areas of special ed, UCSE, Head Start. So about 44% of that bill was really just restoring cuts that were enacted in 2003. So we think that tells you pretty clearly why our school districts are facing the budget challenges they are. So I'll stop there because I know you have a full calendar, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Brad Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity Education. Very happy to be here today to support Representative Morgan's bill, House File 2978. As has been said by other testifiers, absolutely crucial to the fiscal health of school districts as we move in to the next school year. When this bill was first introduced, we polled our membership of 61 members and 46 responded, and of those 46 members, 29 are making cuts and 31 are reducing fund balance, but that adds up to over about 90% of the, many are doing one or the other and many are doing both, but about 90% of our districts are going to be making cuts or reductions in fund balance for the next year. And that in many cases was, as Ms. Coney said, I work with the Osseo District. They did pass one of their three ballot questions and are now in the midst of cutting $16 million from their budget. Other districts, yesterday St. Cloud testified, they failed to renew a levy, and so they're in the midst of making very significant cuts. And Stillwater, which again passed one of three budget questions, is also in the midst of, again, not making cuts, but certainly cuts are on the horizon. Think of some other districts, Big Lake being one. Big Lake has a referendum of about $7 to $10 per kid. They went out for about a $300 referendum this year. They failed, and they're cutting 7% of their budget this year, about $2 million. That's a growing district, but because of the all the pressure that the increased facilities puts on the taxpayers to build build more buildings, it just becomes extremely difficult for those taxpayers to approve a referendum levy. So that's why we have to come back and look at the state. There are instances out there with the school districts with the, or the parents supporting the school district as much as they can, but simply the tax bite is too heavily for them to pass referenda. It's not that they don't love their kids, it's simply that they don't have the money in their pockets to pass an excess levy. And this is the kind of bill where we go back to where the state, looking at funding, getting back to its funding level that it needs to be to put the referendum in its proper place. There's always going to be a referendum, there needs to be one, but it needs to be in its proper place, and we believe bolstering the general education formula is the way to, you know, get to that. Also, special education, as has been said here before, we are seeing again another proration this year. Part of that's moving from two-year lag funding to current year funding, and that was a problem that we saw coming, but it doesn't change the fact there are more expenses out there than there are money to pay for them right now, and that's causing levels of proration, again, causing problems for school districts throughout the state. I'd stand for any questions, but I think it's fairly straightforward. This is a bill that I think the entire school community supports, and rightfully so.
Thank you very much. I'm all set.
Madam Chair, members, Sam Walsh with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I represent about 150 school districts in greater Minnesota. These are some of the regional hubs you heard from yesterday, like Fergus Falls, and some of the smaller districts like Lancaster, who you heard the other day. on a transition aid problem they're having. But the one thing we're hearing from all of the districts that MREA represents is that they're making cuts once again, year after year. It's another round of cuts. We surveyed our membership a few weeks ago just to get a ballpark figure of what we're looking at. And we came up with numbers around 250 to 300 full-time employee positions. Now, that might not sound like a lot of positions if you're from a bigger metropolitan district, but when you're in greater Minnesota, those are real people, real positions, and that's the real classroom teachers who are going to be gone. In terms of numbers, that's dollar figures, that's close to about $20, $22 million in some of the smallest districts in greater Minnesota about what we'll be looking at for cuts next year. Madam Chair, members, we hear every day about how education is the source of adding value to the economy and getting out of recession, yet here we are just sort of adrift once again making another round of cuts and sort of just shrugging our shoulders as if, shucks, well, we can make another year of cuts and some point in time it'll just sort of magically figure itself out. Well, I'm here to tell you it's not going to figure itself out unless you folks take some leadership. Madam Chair, I was around in 2001. It's my first year lobbying at the Capitol, and so I'll take full blame for this if you're willing to help out with a fix. But we bit off, the royal we bit off way more than we could chew in 2001 by getting rid of the general education levy. And the folks in greater Minnesota and metro Minnesota have levied that back. The $1 billion that's come back on the property tax rolls. Maybe that was what was supposed to happen, but we're to the point now where our communities can't, you've divided the communities. Seniors are upset. They can't afford property tax increases anymore. You know, you heard testimony yesterday, Representative Marquardt and the property tax committee, you hear it all the time, about people want to put levies back on seasonal recreational. We just can't play that game anymore. We need the state legislature to step up as a partner once again and put money on the general education formula to get us back back on track instead of making cuts, making the investment in our education and our students. Thank you.
Wonderful. Dan Altweiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Olsberger, Education Minnesota. You know, this really is about what we're doing to our kids and those that are going to be in your spots in 50 years. And we have cut so much that we have almost 40 kids in elementary classes. We have kids sharing test tubes. We have old books that are terribly outdated. Maps that show countries that no longer exist. We have kids sitting in hallways to learn subjects. And we are not afraid of accountability. Teachers welcome standards, welcome accountability. But there has to be another side to it where the teachers and the school districts have the money that they need to teach kids properly, with the right resources, with the right materials, and not things that are out of date. Teachers are now spending an incredible amount of money out of their own pockets to pay for the things that they need to teach their kids. They get $50, some of these teachers get $50 for classroom supplies for the year. They beg their spouses or their friends to have paper so that they can run copies for their kids. What has happened? We have been talking about this for many years, and we always say it's as bad as it can get, but it's only getting worse. And until a decision is made by people in the legislature and the governor to take the bold step to fix the tax system, nothing is going to get better. We keep asking the community, please vote yes, please vote yes. And we have to sell public education to our community when we know that's where all of us are here today because we had a good public education. So Sam said it well, too. He said, talking about investing in our kids is probably one of the best ways to improve our economy. And it's time to do it. Change the tax system. And I know I'm talking about the long term, but right now, we need the money in the formula. We need the money for special education. It used to be, I used to testify when I first started about if you are able to pass a levy referendum, you are the have district, and when those that fail the levy referendum are the have nots. Now, it's the have nots and the have even less. so we appreciate your support. And I know that we have many friends around this table who are willing to find the money, so I'm not here to be upset with this education committee, because I know you value education, but it's time to take the bold step, find the education system, and then go farther and fix the tax system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have about 4 minutes if there's anyone else before we go back to questions for Rustin Morgan. Mr. Graswell.
Madam Chair, members, Jim Graswell, Minneapolis Public Schools. There'll be no surprise that we strongly support a bill that would put a percent on the formula and fund the formulas that are on the book for special education. Lao Tzu said, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. This would be a good step. And maybe it's not 1,000 miles to get the PS Minnesota reform agenda in front of the legislature, but this would be a much better step than what we've seen in the last year. We all have a target, or the last 5 years, really. We all have a target, and Target Corporation's slogan is, expect more, pay less. In the education community, that's the expectations we think we've been living under. We want to deliver all students to proficiency by 2014. That's the expectation. But the state and federal government actually are putting less real revenue per pupil. That's shifted them to the property tax. There have been aid payment shifts. This is the direction we'd rather see this the legislature go with your leadership. I'll put in a word for the ballot language reform in the bill. As a district that will be out on the ballot in 2008 in a very property tax averse environment, renewing a referendum, if we can actually state on the ballot that a renewal is a renewal and may not increase your taxes, that would be a good thing too. Thank you very much. Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Question for Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, first let me ask you about the language, the ballot change.
Sure.
Do you have proof that changing the question to this will not increase property taxes for those who vote on this question?
Representative Morgan.
Let me try to answer your question. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, and then you can let me know if I did or did not. These are for property tax renewals. If people are currently paying a property tax and a renewal is before them for that same property tax, what this language is saying is you are renewing an existing property tax referendum. You are not changing your operating referendum from its level in the previous year. I believe that is clearer and more accurate language that will help people better understand what it is they're voting for.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morgan, there are 14 reasons that property taxes go up and down. And so I have grave concerns about changing the question, because I think as though your intent is great, and, you know, I'd love to make sure that no one's property taxes were affected by changing the ballot question to this, but I just don't think you can go on record and say that won't happen, because the Association of Minnesota Counties has an excellent handout giving the 14 reasons property taxes change. I'm concerned about that. Madam Chair, another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan, do you have a fiscal note for this, and how do you plan to pay for these increases?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I do not have a fiscal note per se. However, the House research has indicated that the cost of this for this biennium would be approaching $175 million, I believe, Mr. Stone. Thank you. So that's what it would be in this biennium. I believe it would be a little more, Mr. Strom, in the tails because of the increased special education contribution. As to your second question, Representative Erickson, that's going to need to be a decision and some suggestions and recommendations that this committee will have to consider. I don't want to get the cart before the horse, but very shortly, Representative Greiling, the chair, will be getting a target from Ways and Means. We will need to be deciding with all of the other bills we've heard that cost money, this one included, if we are going to make these a part of that, and then deciding how we are going to make all of that fit within our target. So I don't have an answer to that because I think that's going to need to be a committee decision.
So, Madam Chair, I hope that this is the first bill we vote on in on the House floor.
I wish it had been the first day. I agree with
you. It should have been ahead of transportation. We heard that from one of the superintendents yesterday.
I think it should have been first. I'm distressed that we've waited this long, and believe you me, others know about it in our side. Hopefully, we'll at least do good when we do get around to it. Representative Benson, Morrow, Olson, and if it's five after, we'll cut it off before then. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a real quick question. Just wondering whether or not the Department of Education has asked to testify on this particular bill.
Representative Benson, we did the people listed, and I asked for more people, and we heard four persons.
And then a little follow-up. I've read with interest in the media that the governor has suggested that whenever the budget decisions are being made, that he would like to hold public schools K-12 harmless. Do you know whether or not the governor would include the idea of an inflationary increase in order to keep the school district's finances harmless?
Captain Benson, we'll get the governor's proposal next week and discuss that then. So I think we better stick with this bill today. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrow, I just make sure I understand the stop language correctly. I don't see that the language, as you're suggesting in the amendment, would say anything about what someone's property taxes would be in the next year. You're simply saying the operating referendum would be stay unchanged. Do I read that correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Moore, that is correct, Representative Moore. As you can see from the bill, it specifically refers to the operating referendum from its level in the previous year.
And I think that's a very good point. Looks like the way it's worded before, that it's going to be increasing even more than what it currently is instead of a wash. Let's see. Representative Olson, you're the last questioner on this bill.
Actually, Madam Chair, we've moved so many bills for possible inclusion. I'm just curious if I've missed it, begging your pardon, what is your plans and what is the schedule for the omnibus bill?
Representative Olson, you know the bill deadlines, and we are waiting to hear about the governor's proposal. We will look at that. Then we will do exactly what Representative Morgan said. We'll wait to hear what we hear from the Ways and Means Committee. And if they tell us all we're doing is cutting, we'll balk. If they give us the money to spend, we'll spend it. But we don't really know yet. We haven't been given that direction. And as soon as we do, this committee will be the first to know.
And Madam Chair, I was from your comments, I was curious if we'd be doing this early. But it sounds like no.
I don't think so, because we're shooting in the dark here.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Representative Morgan, closing word.
Madam Chair, thank you all very much for your time. I realize that last Thursday did not make this any easier, but I think we need to step up and do something. We've heard from people who are directly involved with the education of our children. We've heard from parents. Something needs to be done, and I would suggest this as one option.
Very, very much. One very good option for a minimalist bill. Seems like not too much to ask. Representative Bly. While Representative Bly is coming up, I will move House File 2982 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Bly, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. House File 2982 is a bill that would establish a five-year pilot program for, I believe it's about 10 alternative schools. And the purpose of this bill is to establish another way for alternative schools to be assessed in addition to the that they're being assessed now. And the issue really is that alternative schools, because of the nature of the school that serves students who are at risk of not graduating for a number of different reasons, they often end up on the failing schools list when you look just at the limited measures of testing, reading, and math. And we believe that there are things that alternative schools do that are very important and valuable, and sometimes are necessary to do before the student is able to be successful in these other measures. So, and when we're judged narrowly in that way, the public does not get a picture of the successes that we're capable of and what we're doing. And this bill is in part a result of a bill I wrote last year that was asking to have a conversation with the department about how we might do this better. I chaired a work group over the summer, and we discussed this. And from that those conversations, this bill emerged. And I have with me Terry Lydell, who is currently the president, or the immediate past president, of Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. And, he would still present the idea.
Mr. Lydell, please state your name again and your title.
Terry Lydell, the immediate past president of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. And I want to say before I start my formal testimony that I am really pleased to be here today, because just a week ago, we had over 600 educators from the Learning Options area at our 25th annual state conference. They enjoyed 3 days of over 120 breakout sessions where they did staff development on the whole range of what we face in the learning options area. And I was amazed at the number of times that I was approached during that conference saying to me, "Terry, we've heard about this bill. We've got to have this thing because it's going to help provide the data that shows what we are doing well, and it'll help us do better." So I hope my testimony meets up with their expectation and enthusiasm. House File 2982 is an infrastructure bill. The Systemic Improvement Measures Bill addresses the infrastructure of the individual school. What is in our instruction and management that we are doing right, and what are our opportunities for improvement? How can we construct a system that repeatedly develops learners who can meet high standards and be prepared for active and contributing citizens? Systemic thinking can be looked at as the analysis of the skeleton, muscle, blood, and connective tissue of the school. Systemic thinkers look at all components of a school and work to make it function like a healthy, fit body. Systemic components of a school are the leadership, strategic planning, student and stakeholder focus, staff engagement and development, data analysis and use of knowledge, and how the school properly processes and integrates all of its components.
Mr. Lydell, just so you can budget your time, we have two more bills we're going to end at 10 soon, so I'm planning this bill to be over with by 5:20. It's 5:10, and we need to have time for questions from the members of the bill as well.
There may be some possible accountability confusion, and I want to clarify that. There's a large amount of work that the legislature has done on NCLB, high school redesign, teacher quality, report cards, and so on. And this work is excellent, but this bill does not add another kind of accountability. If anything, this measure is invisible to, and it's kind of like the mortar that holds the bricks of a building together. So it's invisible to all the other accountability measures, and if anything, it can be considered an accountability valuing effort. We have in your packet a budget that looks like this, and we had originally
we changed the color on it.
Doesn't look
again.
Like this. We had originally asked for up to 20 schools in the pilot, and giving full respect to the present budget situation of the state, we are perfectly willing to look at less, accept less, because we think it's very important that we have a pilot so that we can look as a state at, can we make this thing work, the systemic improvement actually work, and we're going to try it with the kids who are toughest hit in our system. the budget assumptions are listed there. If you look at the very bottom line where everybody wants to cast their eye first, it says state portion. Our bill calls for a dollar-for-dollar match of non-state money. And we did that because as we were going through the interim hearings, we heard that we're going to have some financial trouble, so we stepped back and said, okay, look, we'll go after foundations or wherever else we can get the money. On your pink sheet, it's kind of grayed area, and that is 10 pilots, that would be 100 people. And you can see the dollar amounts on the bottom line, that would be the state commitment that we are asking for, and we, of course, would double that, go up to the subtotal line, and that's the amount of dollars that we would be dealing with 10 programs over a five-year period. And with that, I'll just stop, and we can go to questions.
Thank you. Mr. Rydell, I have one question myself. Have you got commitments from foundations, or you plan, if the bill passes, to go out?
The interim hearings were going on, we heard the drumbeats, we didn't go out and get foundations right away. I have talked with McKnight and Medtronic. Bush, unfortunately, is not funding right now. And we can submit to McKnight. They're not sure that we're a perfect fit. We have others on the list. I guess 3M, Wallen, Kopp, and those kinds of people, the usual suspects. The reception is, sounds like being down here at the legislature, they're saying, look, we're tight on money, too. So, yes, we will go out and work those.
Very good. Any other questions from members? Representative Dominguez.
Maybe you can explain to me a little bit about the type of students that you want to perform with. And this alternatives and charter schools, are these immigrant students? Are these students that are first-run students? Can you explain a little bit about that? Are they bilingual students?
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Dominguez. It's a mix of students, but they all have to meet the requirements in statute to attend an alternative learning center or an area learning center. And some of those students are of various ethnic backgrounds. The criteria really is, are they having trouble in school, and what are their reasons? I don't know if you're familiar with graduation incentive law, but there are such things as being behind academically, having problems with chemical dependency, mental health, and additional things like that. So there are schools in our association that do have a predominance of Latino or even African American students, depending upon their location. But that's not a criteria for their attending the school. It's really the other issues that they may have difficulties with. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat. Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason why I asked that, I was at an alternative school before I became a legislator, working at an alternative school, and some of the students there were needed discipline, and some of the students were from Somali, Latin America, and so on and so forth. The language barrier was one of the big issues there, but some of the students were disruptive, possibly with some mental health issues. How will you handle those students if you get those students with teachers and counselors? And
Mr. Lydell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Statute site is 124D.68 sub 2, and English language learners are part of the criteria to be placed in an area learning center. I guess the more concise way to say it is, yeah, the area learning centers and some of the charter schools who choose to take those kinds of students really don't care who comes through the door. They want them there. In fact, the most frequent refrain we hear from people is, why don't they send them to us sooner from the regular school system? Because then we have a longer time to work with them. So we are saying, give us the students who meet the criteria of 124D.68, and we will work with them. And this systemic measures bill is meant to help us analyze how can we deal better with that situation. If I may set an example, let's suppose that a school finds they are experiencing a large number of students with mental health issues. They should be asking themselves such questions as, what is our staff preparation for dealing with this? Do we have enough knowledge to identify the areas that our kids are dealing with? what resources do we have outside of here? If we are using resources outside of here, are they adequate and are they working for our kids? And they would drill down to what is it they need to improve their school system to better serve that student, regardless of who they can walk in their door.
I have some other questions, but I can deal with that a little bit later. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson, you'll be the last questioner on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bly, maybe you have a reason for this, but I see no mention of actual teachers of alternative programs or parents who have had children enrolled in alternative programs on your advisory board. Is there a reason that you left those two out?
Representative Bly.
I think I'll let Terry Lydell answer that. Madam Chair and Representative, what we were looking for primarily was the representation across the program, so we had people who were very familiar with the students and with the program. A school that is doing systemic measures must, in its stakeholder components, bring in parents. Must address parents. It would be done via surveys, by input within the school, by coming into the school and participating, but that's where the parents get included.
Madam Chair, just one last question. Representative Blythe, this will cost about $1 million over the years, correct? Do you have a source of revenue for that?
Representative Blythe.
No, we don't have a source of revenue for the state portion of this, but we are hoping that if there is money available, it would be included. We also are committing to finding money on our own, so we'll have to do that. We believe this is valuable to our programs, and I think it will not only improve the communication with the public about what our schools do, but create a way for schools to improve themselves on an ongoing basis.
Madam Chair, there are deeper benefits that in this short time frame we can't talk about. A school that is operating systemically gathers a huge amount of data. And they, there are schools like the Chugach School District in Alaska which uses systemic programming and finally sends kids to college who are native and living in rural communities. What we will find is we will gather data that presently does not exist at MDE. If we have a large amount of students with mental health issues, we're going to identify sources that are not working, and that feedback can come to the policymakers like yourself, who will be able to say, look, we've got some deficiencies in our social service network that we have to change, and you'll have the data to do that.
Thank you very much, and I know the policy committee looked at the actual testing part of it in depth, so this is the finance committee. So thank you very, very much. And we will lay over House File 2978 for possible inclusion. That's not right? 2982. It's the first mistake Ms. Shannon has ever made.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Moe was sitting here patiently and and so has Representative Peter. Oh, he is here.
Yeah.
You're about to adjourn the meeting. Welcome, Representative Moe. I'll move House File 3347 for possible inclusion. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Many of you were in policy the other day, so it will be a little bit of review. I'm hoping you still have the same handouts that we had in policy committee. Should I get them copied? Okay. I can speak about the bill and why the hand came up with them. Many of us have schools within our district who have been labeled as not being adequate yearly progress. And I think that we all share a concern for quality accountable education. We wouldn't be, or you wouldn't be, serving on this committee. I'm a teacher myself, and that's extremely important to me. However, I would argue that the system that we currently have is arbitrary and
somewhat clouded in secrecy, so that many of the schools that have been labeled AYP don't really have good information as to why the decisions have been made. And when there's a fairly lengthy appeals process, but again, it's reviewed internally by the Department of Education. When that information comes back, the decision is final, and oftentimes doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And those school districts who have been told their schools aren't meeting AYP have no recourse afterwards. Sorry for not having the handouts immediately, but the first handout that you're going to get is from the director of Trek North School, Dan McKeon. His school was labeled as not meeting adequate yearly progress in spite of being labeled as one of the 6 best schools in the state of Minnesota by U.S. News & World Report, yet 2 of the students who took the test moved out of the district, yet were counted against the test total for them. We've heard about this before. So less than 95% of the students took the test, and therefore the school didn't meet AYP, even though a high percentage of the students who took the test did very, very well. Their appeal came back several months later and didn't answer their questions. To their mind, it wasn't an appeal process there. It was our way or the highway. The other letters that you're going to get are from the Minty School District. And many of us remember the tragic events of 2005 in Red Lake School. Because of concerns and a sense of trauma about going back to that school, many of those students went to the Minty School District, and we were glad to have them. Yet the challenges that they brought with them and the challenges they brought to the school, some of the schools also didn't meet AYP. And I don't think the school district would change the decision to accept those students with open arms. However, that the decision about AYP for a couple of those schools was fairly arbitrary as well. And they would have liked to have had a more empathetic appeal process, one that took into account the circumstances at hand. So we are not the only state to have potentially gone down this road before. Illinois has done the same, has set up a very similar process. In fact, the process that I'm proposing here is modeled after theirs, allows for an appeal in a timely fashion to a committee made up of 5 education professionals, varying organizations, and then that committee would decide appeals, make recommendations back to the commissioner, and then the commissioner would have to notify those schools in a timely fashion. I think it's a reasonable compromise. It allows a fair recourse to the schools, and still keeps the pressure on them to succeed, which we want them to also. But we would like to not guarantee that all of them are not going to succeed because of a process that's arbitrary and somewhat challenging to navigate for them. So with that, I think, if you want to, Madam Chair, would you like to take other comments or would you like questions?
I believe, Representative Moe, that we should hear from the department if there is anyone who wishes to testify on this. We do have one legislative questioner, but I think we should allow time, since they've got their letter in here, so they can, and they're here, that we could hear from them. Welcome, Ms. Montano. If you could state your name and title. We don't see you here as much anymore.
Madam Chair, I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure I miss being here.
I was
here.
Beyond the phrase you'd say that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jessie Montagna. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education with the MCLB program. The department does have some concerns with respect to this bill. First of all, we were concerned about the timelines. The schools do have the requirement to notify parents as soon as they know their AYP status with respect to choice and supplemental educational services, and also concerned about the challenge that scheduling would take. We have used external advisory committees in the past. This is a process that's 6 years old, and it is always challenging to try and schedule these people to come in and meet. And so it appears like, in this case, they would appeal, we would have a notice. If they didn't like it, then they could ask for a hearing. Then we would try to get everybody together, so we're really concerned about the extended timelines. The process that we have in place and that we're continuing to refine each year is based on the requirements that all students enrolled in school be tested. So we've begun using Mars data because we were finding out that there were students that weren't tested when we were simply using the number of tests that were returned to the department. And so we began to use Mars data. So we've got students enrolled and we're responsible for having these students tested. Schools and districts had a number of opportunities to look at their data and match their Mars data with test data. I can tell you that in the situation with respect to North Trek, in three of the four situations where they did not make AYP, our process, which did a number of recalculations in matching and loosened up the criteria in three of those four, we were able to change the status to make an AYP, so there was only one place where they did not make AYP, and I believe it was the all math student group. The reading all student group, because of our recalculation when we loosened up our criteria, they made AYP. The reading white student group, because of our recalculation, there was a particular student there where we did an override. I believe it was a foreign exchange student that should not have been tested in writing, so we were able to do an override. And then the math white student group, because of our recalculation, and I think we did it two times, made AYP. So we do think we have a process in place that does look at giving districts flexibility and a fair opportunity. And as I said, it is based on the criteria or the requirements that all students be tested.
Antonio, have you worked with Rep. Mo? Would there be suggestions that you would make to him that would make this bill acceptable?
Madam Chair, I believe we'd be happy to sit down and discuss with him how this process could maybe be reviewed and see that we meet some of his concerns.
Thank you. Rep. Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moll, this is the second bill we've had now with an advisory board. Is that a sure thing, then, that an advisory board would override a commissioner's decision? Based, of course, on NCLB criteria?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, of course not. Five people would be selected to participate in this committee, and there's no determining how they're going to vote on anything. I think the committee and the appeal process would just allow for an outside group to review these decisions. I think there's a certain amount of distrust that the department is actually deciding these without an agenda, and having an outside group with other professional educators to just review and then make recommendations back to the commissioner would probably help the credibility of the department, just so that that people knew that there was another group of eyes actually looking at the appeals process.
And then on page 2, line 20, it's current law remains, Representative Erickson, where it says the commissioner's decision to uphold or deny an appeal is final. Mm-hmm. So this would just be fresh eyes recommending, and then the commissioner could take that into account, but still would be the final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, just another comment, that the bill does, and I don't have the amended version in front of me, so I don't have the line exactly, but I think it's 1.17, if I remember correctly. It actually allows for, excuse me, it's on the second page. It allows for, under extenuating circumstances, for the department to adjust the timeline. So if, by chance, the department brought this point up 2 days ago, if there's a whole bunch of appeals right after the AYP notifications have been sent out, well, of course, we're going to allow them to, to adjust the schedule a little bit so they can meet the demand. It doesn't make sense for us not to. So in the bill, it's some flexibility on the timeline is there, but it's important that the schools actually have a generally predictable timeline.
Any other testimony from the audience? And or anything else from Ms. Montagna?
Again, Madam Chair, our concerns are the timelines, that if the district decides to wait until day 29, they do have to notify parents, choice, and I just, we're just concerned about the ramifications and, you know, what would be a, you know, a situation where, you know, unusual circumstance, it could be almost anything. And so, right now, based on the fact that all students must be tested, we're relying on data, and we use data, and so it's difficult to dispute data when it's right in front of you. So we think that, you know, the committee, you know, there might be better use of their time when you're looking at data. And what's an unusual circumstance in the situation might not be here. It would be a difficult call.
Thank you very much. Anybody else that wishes to testify? Don't see any legislators. Representative Moe, a closing comment?
Appreciate you hearing the bill, and hope to get your support.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Representative Peterson. I'll move House File 3622 for possible inclusion. We're going to adjourn Representative Peterson at 10:02, so you can have up until that time. It's now 5:33, because as you know, we have session at 6 o'clock.
Right. Well, we're hoping that this will be short and sweet because it's such a simple bill.
Famous last words, right?
Beware of those.
Do I
need to move House?
I just moved it, and you don't run this committee. So.
And then I also have two amendments, and
I would move the A1 amendment.
Representative Morrow moves the A1 amendment. Do you want to explain it?
The A1 amendment, may I invite Representative Peterson to explain the amendment.
Representative Peterson.
It would, in the loop, 5 and insert 3.0 in the original bill. Small change.
Headline 1.19, Madam Chair.
Right, 1.19, we're changing the 2.5 to the 3.0. Any discussion on that amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
I'd like to move the A2 amendment and invite Representative Peterson to explain the amendment.
The A2 amendment is moved by Representative Morrow. Representative Peterson.
Okay. Madam Chair, and this would allow the referendums to be held on the primary election day.
All right. Any question or discussion on Amendment A2? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, the bill is now in the shape you want it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you certainly heard from the Robbinsville School District yesterday, as I understand, and I think it has been in the papers for the last several months. And they're in dire straits, as are many districts around the state, because we're one of those that did not pass. This bill would allow for some discretion on the part of the district as to when they would hold any future referendums. It seems to me that we need to be a little proactive here. This bill doesn't wait until you get into statutory operating debt before you hold the referendum, but instead says that if you get close to statutory operating debt, you ought to have the same rights as those districts who go into statutory operating debt. And I have two experts with me, Bob Whitman from the Robbinsville School District, and Gary who is their financial director in the school district, and I'm going to ask them to testify.
Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Bob Whitman. I'm the Executive Director of Community Education and Community Relations for the Robbinsville Area Schools. I'm joined today with Gary Holland, Director of Finance for the Robbinsville Area Schools, and we're here to help you understand what this may mean for the Robbinsville Area Schools. I guess I'm also the voice today of over 500 people who are citizens of our community that are engaged in our process through our Legislative Action Coalition, which identified this as one of their priorities in conversation with you during the session. You heard yesterday the Robbinsville Area School story. Superintendent Mack spoke passionately about his story. Parent Jackie Wells talked about her story. This referendum has divided this community. It was a huge effort that involved lots of people. The cuts are deep, they're real, they're painful. But you know, we have a new resolve, but we need your help. I sense that there is an incredible energy coming from our citizens and our staff saying, you know what, we got smacked, but we're coming out of this, and we're going to fight hard with a three-pronged approach. We need to duct tape the school district together. But then we need help with the referendum, and we need your long-term help to fix the problem. We have staff working diligently, passionately, every day. While we're doing this, they're doing incredible work in our classrooms, and we need to be there in their support. I'm going to turn it over to Gary to tell you a little bit about the financial situation of our school district, and I'll share a little bit more about it.
Thank you, and before he starts, did you know that before the day was out yesterday, I already had an email from Jackie Wells. That's pretty good.
She's with us today.
Oh, she is. Okay, there she is. Mr. Howland.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Because of the referendum that decreasing our fund balance, plus for fiscal year 08, we cut $4.5 million. We will be cutting $5.4 million in fiscal year 09. And we're anticipating cutting $4 million in fiscal year 2010. The four of the three-year cuts will be about 10% of our operations. We have also been taking down fund balance. Our fund balance ended up June 30th, 2007, at about $3.3 million. I anticipate our fund balance at the end of June 2008 will be $800,000. So we are getting close to that statutory operating debt area, and that's one of the reasons why we are in support of this bill, so that we can have another tool at our disposal to be more proactive rather than reactive if we got into statutory operating debt, which we hope not to do, but, you know, that's beyond our control sometimes.
Thank you, Mr. Howland. Mr. Whitman.
And so thank you, Madam Chair. Again, we're looking to be proactive. We need some flexibility to do that. But I'm going to share a little bit more of the story of Robbinsdale. We talked about the short-term, mid-term, long-term. We need your help to do that. But we also need to unite this community. The stories of our community really are about providing a fair opportunity to do two things. Provide the dollars needed to provide programs and opportunities for our kids, but also to debate the rhetoric, quite frankly, at the end of our debate that has absolutely gutted some of the spirit of our community. And let me just share with you some of the things that we are dealing with. Referendum, last weekend, Sunday distribution of distortions, quote-unquote. If the board simply refused to serve 1,000 of our non-resident students, the school district could save $10 million, which was basically what we were asking for in referendum. We are a very inclusive community. We welcome people from all our borders. We welcome the people of all of our districts. Basically, the rhetoric there was, close your borders, and this problem will go away. The other one was, so now we're pitting resident kids versus non-resident kids. And probably the most hurtful for me was this statement. For our resident students in this special education group, good schools often find that restoring a rock-solid phonics reading program eliminates these special needs. How ludicrous is that? And that these kind of statements are still pervasive in our community. We believe if we have flexibility to go for a referendum where the noise of a presidential, a Senate, and the other races allow us to debate the issue, we can set the record straight and we can be successful in a referendum. Without that, we really are fearful that we can't get through the noise of a November election, and it's just too long to wait. Madam Chair, that starts there.
Thank you very much, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would concur that this has been a difficult time for the district. And what this does, it's discretionary. The district may decide they need to do it. They may not. If they don't reach that statutory operating debt, it would be wonderful. My guess is that they will when we look at the needs of the district. And again, we ought not to wait until they're hanging on by one finger. We give them maybe two hands and an opportunity to run a referendum at some time. You still have to abide by the rest of the rules. You have to send out the notices. You have to do all the things that you're expected to do. This just allows you some discretion, the same discretion as if you were in statutory operating debt, the same thing, only now you can do it when you're close to the line instead of under the line. You're still above the water, not drowning.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, and I think we're skirting probably the issue here, and the real issue is a lack of school funding. That's the issue, because we know that in odd year elections where you have a lower turnout, you have a higher percentage of approval on these operating referendums, and that's what we're getting at here. And is if you get a little lower turnout, and granted, on a presidential election, you've got the noise and everything else, but you do get all the residents out at that point. I also think it's a good chance to get the message out. But I think what we're trying to do here, quite frankly, is to get to an election where you have a lower turnout and your chances of passing it are better. But I think what we're trying to do is nibble around the edges, and we're not addressing the real problem, which is the lack of school funding. And I worry a little bit that we try some of these other approaches to get around when now we're letting the real problem off the hook. And so I, quite frankly, I'm not a big fan of this, because I think you lose a little accountability, and I know in some of the ones with the bond issues, where you don't have to have them in November, you know, and they're by Christmas time, boy, I hear a lot of complaints about that. And, you know, that one district, Lake Park Audubon, has failed now three times on one, and I think part of it might be because the last one was held in December, and I just heard a lot of grumbling. And we wound up with almost a big turnout, because there's a lot of people that keep voted absentee and whatever, but they're almost motivated by. So I think we might be getting too cute with this and trying to avoid the real problem, and that's my concerns with this. So that's the comment.
And Representative Marquardt serves on the tax committee, so that's a big statement, I guess, but you're right. I think people are grasping at straws. Before I go to more legislators, and I have Representative Erickson and Representative Morgan, to budget our time, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, we'll take Mr. Kruzis, and then we'll go to Representative Erickson and then Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, Scott Krum, Quincy Association, Metropolitan School Districts, and we do support this legislation, and I think Representative Marquardt raises a very valid point. But the reality is right now, school districts do depend on these operating referendum. They're not for extras, you all know that. They're for the meat and potatoes. And so, how about if we do this? Let's fully fund schools first, then we can come back and repeal this, all right? But in the meantime, we gotta have, you know, some hope, that we gotta have some ability. Got to give us a fighting chance to try to pass these things, as long as they're going to meat and potatoes. Thank you.
Absolutely fair, too. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to this gentleman, did you analyze or try to analyze the voters, you know, who voted yes and those who voted no? I don't even know if it's possible to do that. So you could get kind of an idea. I mean, is it because their per capita income is lower? I mean, could you get a handle at all on this, other than the statements I heard this gentleman say that, you know, not misinformation?
Mr. Howland.
We're in the process of doing a survey as we speak to try to answer some of that information. We're not at
Sir Whitman.
We're not quite there yet.
But you're going to do that. Okay, that's
good. Jim Morgan, you'll be the last.
Wow, thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to say that I too share Representative Marquardt's concerns. However, I signed on to this bill for one reason. I think the current law, perhaps, in some way, for some districts that just feel so desperate to fund the basic needs of their school, it could provide them an incentive to go into statutory operating debt, because it gives them certain options they don't have unless they're there. We shouldn't have incentives for districts to go into statutory operating debt. I see this as removing that incentive, putting them in a much better fiscal position without having to make that desperate choice. So,
and we are kind of in the position of beggars can't be choosers about how we allow schools to do what we're not doing. That's the bottom line, in my opinion, which is why I signed up for this bill, too. If I had a perfect world, I would have schools funded like we said we would do when we took over school funding. And, of course, we didn't find a funding source for that that we had the courage to put in. So we quickly slid back to where we were before, and now we're back to the most unfair tax, the hated property tax, which really I think should be for cities and counties, and we should be paying for schools from the state. But since we're not, then we can't have a perfect world. And so I agree with Representative Morrow. Representative Peterson, or any of you testifiers, you have 3 more minutes if you want to chatter on.
Madam Chair, I'm certain the committee would like to get out early. And I would add that we're not just speaking for Robbinsdale here. There are many, many districts around the state who would have this opportunity, as we would.
Mr. Whitman.
Madam Chair, members,
we couldn't agree more. This is the duct tape piece of it, you know, and they just did rain solution. We support the work that you're doing for a long-term solution. We'll go back to our offices tomorrow and start planning another $5 million in cuts, and that's our reality. And so we couldn't agree with you more in terms of the fiscal bar debate.
Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.